The Valley Current.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. Are you in Boston or Peru or?
I'm in Boston. Just, you know, it's been running around here. How you been?
Pretty good.
So that's good.
We haven't gone to war with Iran, so that's good news.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to war with Iran. I think that Iran will pick on us, you know, at some point in the future. The Houthi rebels seem to be now videoing their takeover of ships, which I don't think is a good sign.
Is that so, right?
Yeah. There was a video that came out on the news where now they're becoming, you know, they're looking like a SWAT team taking over, and they're toasting to the Ayatollah. So it's an interesting time. Definitely an interesting time.
You're not worried about World War III. I'm surprised.
No, I'm not. I'm not worried about it, truthfully, Jack, because the thing is that what I am worried about is asymmetrical warfare, which is the, you know, one-off terrorist attacks, car bombings, suicide bombings, disruption of things like cybersecurity, those types of things. You know, you don't humiliate an enemy and expect them to take it.
Right.
You know, they may pause their activities. But I think that the situation for Israel is that clearly they've manifested they are the military power in the region. Okay, in such an oppressive way, with Hezbollah and now Iran, that nobody's going to come to the rescue of Iran on a military basis. Iran's going to have to figure out a way to get out of their own mess. And one of the things that is a characteristic of that culture is patience. And the theocracy will survive. And even though it's a lot of opposition, they're still pretty well entrenched.
Right.
So we'll see.
Your CEOs must be worried, though, because the tariff thing is not over, right?
Well, you know, as recently as today is, you know, you're announcing a 50% tariff on Brazil because Trump is upset that they're litigating against their former president, which to me is that's their business. I don't know what that has to do with tariffs.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, what's happening is for us with our clients, Jack, it's the nature of the blog that we sent out earlier this week, the snap out of it concept, because at this particular point, it is so chaotic. Okay, you've got invasions of MacArthur Park with, you know, ICE and police and, you know, officers on horseback, and the only thing that was in the park was a summer camp.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know, and I don't know who was showing force to. Now, if all of a sudden we're going to have a military, you know, democracy is going to pale next to the military, there's four things that are checkmates there. One is that I don't believe the active duty military officers will stand for it any more than General Milley did or Mark Esper did. Okay, they will finally get to the generals who are just saying, I'm sorry, this is not what the Constitution says. That's one. Second is, you know, unless they remove the power to vote, which they didn't even do during World War II, you're going to see an overreaction against the administration for apparently removing civil rights, okay, which is what I would expect to see. Third is I think you're going to see people really reacting negatively, not only to the way the chaos and the cruelty of ICE, but also the what they're giving up under this Build Back Better, the big, beautiful bill. Mm. And the fourth issue is, at the end of the day, I mean, at the end of the day, I think people prefer to to be living in a democracy than they do in a dictatorship. Okay. And Trump has just not got very strong people around him. So if he's looking at, if he's doing a hostile takeover of the United States using his real estate mindset, he better have a hell of a lot better people than the clowns that he has, including now the CIA director, you know, going after Brennan today, which makes no sense at all, other than vindications for the 2000, you know, 9 years ago, they're looking for vindication of the Russia thing. I mean, it's just a distraction.
Well, what about Pam Bondi saying that she had the Epstein
right there list on her desk? You know, there's the right there on my desk. I got the list, and then all of a sudden, there is no list. You know?
This might be the thing that does him in.
I think that I don't think it'll be this. I think that what's going to happen is he will. This is my speculation. He'll continue to be president during this term. That the Democrats will take a fairly significant portion of the House in 2026. And
right.
We'll start investigating him. Okay. Now, they may not get as far as impeachment in the Senate, but there'll be enough investigations that they'll be laying the groundwork for return of the Democrats in 2028. Okay. Because it'll be some of the younger, probably a gubernatorial candidate, whether it's your guy there, Newsom, or the Illinois guy, Pritzker. Okay, possibly Pennsylvania, Andy Beshear. Some of it, I don't think it's going to be somebody from the Senate. And what will happen is that the courts, which have so far been very friendly to Trump, I mean, excessively friendly, are going to start taking a harder look at some of the things that he's done. They can say, yes, you are entitled to fire anybody you want. But if they do that at the expense of the agencies, all right, then the courts have to listen to their constituency, not just look at the Constitution. They're going to have to say, you know, the abolition of FEMA is costing people their lives. Okay, so I'm a little bit more optimistic. There's a MSNBC personality, Rachel Maddow, okay, who's probably the most outspoken critic of the administration. And
right.
she had a book that she wrote, which is very predictive, called Prequel, where she was going back in time. This is what we're going through right now is not new. Okay. It happened back in the, you could say it happened under McCarthy, it happened pre-World War II, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And she came to Boston when the paperback came out. And my wife and I went, place was packed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Absolute place was packed. And she just laid it out. She says, you know, they're in the process. As soon as they got in power, they were on the road to self-destruction. Okay, the protests, the courts, just the sensibilities of the electorate and the sensibilities of the citizens. And the way they've been behaving, it makes it easy. I mean, it's not accidental. Trump's popularity polls are plummeting. I mean, they're as low as Truman's was when he left office, and Bush 1, Bush 2, you know. So I just think that people, Truman said something when MacArthur was fired, and there was this huge reaction, negative reaction towards Truman. And he made the statement, sometimes it takes a while, but the American people actually wake up to those people who are phones.
Sooner or later. Kind of.
Sooner or later. And
yeah.
I think in this case, it's taking a little too long. But, you know, I was listening to a podcast a while ago, Kinzinger. You know, he made the statement, which I would agree with. He said, I don't know why anybody would vote for this guy just before the election. But I think that what's happened is people are just getting most people in the United States are not paying attention to what's going on unless it's material to them. Okay, the bill, big, beautiful bill, most people don't know what's in it. They will when their health care starts giving way. They will when they're in a national disaster and there is no such thing as FEMA. They will when their neighbors get pulled off the street by masked people with AK, with, you know, assault rifles. And I think that's what's waking people up. Eventually, what's going to wake people up. I had this Kafka-esque experience over the holidays. I was out walking, listening to a podcast, and I was listening to the pain and suffering under Doge. Carter had this thing, this river blindness solution, which was working. The PEPFAR thing was working. They're discontinued. Okay. And I came home and I clicked on the news and there's a $50 million wedding in Venice. Mm-hmm. And I just blurted out to my wife, oh, for fuck's sake. Okay. And what happened, Jack, literally, is my wife says, well, how do you explain the daily deliveries from Amazon?
Right.
Okay. Now, I was this close to saying, and how do you explain the Washington Post subscription? But, you know, I didn't want to sleep on the couch in this heat we're having in Boston. So, you know, I restrained myself. But it's what led to the blog about snap out of it, because I really got to snap out of it too. I mean, I'm getting to the point where anger, revulsion, that's all I'm going to take is a thing. And it doesn't make me a good consultant when I'm talking to the CEOs saying, you got to pay attention to the fact that your associates are looking to you to break the logjam here. They are looking for you to make a declaration of intent as to where you stand.
Right. Okay?
And that's kind of the leading into, I think, what we're talking about right now, is that's the advice we are giving our C-suite clients, which is the chaos. You know, I mean, it can be funny to call Trump as it relates to terrorists in El Taco. It can be irritating to watch how cruel and chaotic the ICE deportations. It can be intellectually intriguing to think about what is the role of the Supreme Court right now. Okay, right. Is it promoting an autocracy, or is it, is this really the interpretation of the Constitution? Because if that's the case, it's been dormant. And it's also an issue here of this protest going over all over the place. But at the end of the day, it is, we did reelect this guy, and he's doing everything he said he was going to do.
Right.
So we have to ask ourselves the question, not why did we elect him? It's, okay, is he doing everything he said he was going to do? And is he doing it the way he said he was going to do it?
Yeah.
The Liberation Day tariffs, everybody saw their net worth get crushed.
Right.
And he had to back away from that. Now he's doing it again. And it's chaotic. And one of the things, as you know from your clients and you know from our clients, is they don't like chaos and unpredictability.
And so, we're in a period where I'm not sure he's got any systematic view on anything. I think he just makes decisions as they arrive on his desk.
There was a study, I can't remember what I was reading, but Trump used to go into his office when he was a real estate mogul without an agenda for the day. Okay, saying, well, what am I going to focus on today? All right. And I've worked with CEOs like that. All right. That what happens is they think they are at their best when they're shooting from the hip.
Right. Okay?
And, I'm sure you've worked with them too.
Right.
But now that style is not reassuring to the people mm-hmm. who are being led. And if anything, it's maybe not being antagonizing them, but if they don't know where they stand, then they're, when people don't know where they stand, they always defer to anxiety.
Right.
They don't defer to optimism.
Right.
Okay. And, we're hearing from too many clients, and the research we're doing, we're words that that are very provocative are surfacing. You know, it's not an irritator or I'm worried. You know, it's, you know, much more forceful expressions of displeasure and or anxiety, and many people who spoke.
You think it's going to result in more of the C-suite retiring early?
No.
In the big picture?
I think possibly just the opposite.
Opposite.
Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, we've looked at it as four stages, okay, because we've been posing that same question to ourselves, Jack. Coming out of COVID, there was this reflection on C-suite executives. Life is too short.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what was happening is they were accelerating their departures. Okay. One big client we had, we were working at the officer level, a global client. And their succession plan was predictable 5%. Okay. Coming out of COVID, it was 8% the first year and 12% the second. Now, what that does is puts the succession plans on you have to ask how good is your succession plan.
Right.
And the second thing, it puts pressure on the high potential development plans. So we had that factor. Then coming out of COVID, you had the great resignation. Okay. More opportunities than we had people. Okay. So there was pressure on the CEOs and C-suite executives to stay a little bit longer, even if you wanted to leave earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you had the issue here of very low unemployment, a very healthy economy under President Biden. Okay. And people were, if not committed to a company, they were committed to their careers. And
yeah.
They were investing in themselves and they were trying to figure out what's next for them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's the stage we were in working with executives who were contemplating leaving on our transition advisory, saying, okay, leaving to do what? Because you still have a long life runway.
Right.
All right. You know, if we go back to the person we know in common, Chip Connelly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, one of the things, if you reduce everything that Chip has written about, it's best to have a plan than not to have a plan.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what we're seeing right now is the disruption in the economy, the disruption on the geopolitical basis, and the disruption in terms of society and disruption in terms of democracy. So what's happening, some people who were on their way out are sheltering in place. Okay. Because they don't know what the plans that they were making, how effective and functional they would be when left.
Yeah, I think sometimes there's so much wealth that when the going gets tough, the wealthy C-suite exits stage left. And they say life is too short.
I think that that's what we were seeing. We were seeing more of it coming out of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing it less right now because of the turbulence. And you're also seeing the younger executives, okay, even though they have means, are looking for revenue-producing roles now, whether it be boards or consulting firms. They're getting into social media, you know, Substacks. Okay.
Right.
You and I are on this conversation. By the time this conversation ends, there'll be at least 1,000 people who have started a podcast.
Right.
Including you.
Right.
So, you just look at the issue here of people are trying to understand what's going on and then plan accordingly. But right now, it's the lack of understanding that has people reluctant to make serious moves in terms of their careers and their life.
So you don't think about retiring, right?
No.
You never think about it.
No, because the definition of retirement to me is a little bit different with other people, which is I woke up in France on my 75th birthday in January, and I said to my wife, 60 is the new 40. I turned 75. What's the new 75? And the response was 74. which is compelling to me is, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm enjoying who I'm doing it with. I seem to have an audience for my writing.
Okay. Absolutely.
We still have
a growing audience.
You should be surprised. You keep hearing from people you thought died a long time ago. But it's very gratifying. But what's even more gratifying for us is we are being deliberately edgy. Okay, that was a decision. And then when you look at the collective and discussion partners, most of the people would be moderate to the right Republicans, truthfully. Okay. AOC is not highly thought of, mm-hmm. okay, because she's too far to the left, is it? Brilliant as she is.
Right.
All right. Hers and Bernie Sanders for our group, our community of consultants, including me, that's a little too far to the left and is a little too far to the right. So all of us, whether we're Democrats or Republicans, really say we're moderate. The big thing that the discussion within our community, which is within the working group, it's about 60 people, is, what's the fairest tax strategy and the rights of women to make choices for their own body. Those are the two things that we have political discussions. Those are the two we're about. I can't point to any of the people I'm working with who think that the big, beautiful bill is a good idea.
Right.
And the same group of people think that the Supreme Court went too far in eliminating a woman's right to choose to manage her own body. I mean, that's like a universal truth within the group of people who are older. Right. If you have to be 55 to carry the card, our average age is not 71. Okay, mm-hmm. so you could be maybe curmudgeons or something like that, but those are the two things that are universal truths within our community of highly educated people who've been working in consultants for decades.
Right. So let me ask you a completely different topic, which is, what do you think about Elon Musk starting a new political party, the American Party?
The thing is, if Elon Musk hadn't done Doge,
okay, he'd have a chance, right?
I think he would be more persuasive. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, I'm looking at John Anderson. I'm looking at Ross Perot. Okay,
right,
And I'm looking at the other parties, the smaller parties, like the Green parties in Europe.
Okay? Right.
There are people who are just not happy with either choice they have. I mean, really, the last several elections, okay, the presidential, certainly since President Obama, okay, there has not been a lot of enthusiasm for whoever both parties have put up. All right. And so I think that there is a sentiment that, well, if this is the best they can do, maybe there should be a door number three.
Right.
But to make that happen, that's very difficult.
He's got the money.
He has the money, but he also has the reputation as a disruptor and a little bit of the Waco taco. We're going to keep talking about tacos.
Okay. Right.
So, I think that he's exploiting a sentiment, though, how do I describe it? I think he's exploiting a sentiment and a belief right now that the Democratic and Republican parties are not satisfying the needs of the constituents that they have. One of the things that I've been monitoring, and we're working I can't name the client, but we're working with a client that is focusing on ranked voice vote choices, like New York.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what you find is If you have the different, if you have the ability to rank the candidates 1 to 5, you do come up with an alternative answer than 1 or 2. Okay. So what happens is you get a better, you capture more robustly what people are thinking about the slate that they have.
Right. Right. And
now, this young man who, you know, beat the former governor, the former head of HUD, and until he shot himself in the head, you know, frankly, the one everybody was tuning in during COVID, to beat him. Now, supposedly he didn't campaign very hard and all that other stuff, but he not only beat him, he embarrassed him. Now, here's a young man who's, I don't know if he'll be elected mayor, but it's a wake-up call.
Right.
That if, you know, those people who are really trying to court your vote, not take it for granted, like Mrs. Clinton did in 2016 in Michigan, saying that, of course, Michigan is going to be blue. Or Cuomo saying, well, I have the pedigree. Who's this kid? Okay. Then, you know, there's a story coming from Massachusetts. Tip O'Neill
right.
was the master of retail politics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I was an elected official, this is a story that he was actually a friend of my grandfather's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? My grandfather was older, but Mr. O'Neill was somebody who knew my grandfather. My grandfather was the mayor of the city in which I grew up in when he was 26.
Nice. Okay?
1905. And so when I decided, you know, what the hell, I'll try this. The story that I kept hearing was when O'Neill ran for, I think it was city councilor in Cambridge, he lost.
Really?
Yeah. And he's walking down the street and he's talking to some lady, older lady. And locally he was known as Thomas. Okay. And Thomas, I'm sorry you lost. And he said, I do not understand it. Okay. I have so many friends. And she said, I didn't vote for you. and it stopped him in his tracks. And he said, you know, Mrs. Galuli or whatever her name was, you changed my diapers when I was a kid. I mean, why right. didn't you vote for me?
Right.
And she said, you never asked. And this is why I think this young man in New York did so well. He was all over the place.
Right, right.
And he was all over the place. There's a senator here in Massachusetts, Senator Markey. And when he got his stop, okay, I can remember sitting in a baseball game watching, I think it was a Little League game, way back in the day. All right, car pulls up, and I'm watching somebody trudge across, must have been 100 yards, to get to the people who were sitting in the stands.
Right.
Okay. Now, most people would have driven by mm-hmm. versus on a hot summer day, get out of the car, walk 100 yards, and start shaking hands and introducing themselves.
Right. Okay. Right.
So, you know, that retail politics piece has never gone away.
Right.
You know, but I think politicians have lost sight of the fact that people do want to see you, do want to hear what you have to say. And and I'm by no means a brilliant politician here, but the reason that I won office twice is because, well, once, the first time, I'll share this with you now, is I have 3 brothers, and we were all schlepping around the neighborhoods in the city, and my 3 brothers were all pretending to be me.
Nice.
You know, so we appeared to be everywhere. and when the newspaper kind of glommed on to the fact that, you know, Jesus, this Tom Casey seems to be everywhere, they put a picture in the paper. It was none of the 4 of us. But one of my brothers said, well, he's better looking than all of us. Let's just not tell him. So they didn't catch up to it for a couple of weeks. But you know, that's the local politician, local office. So, you know, those types of things that I'm looking in New York, and it's not only the message that's sent. If you look in New York, think of it 3 ways. One is, this young man made a statement.
Okay. Right.
People want to change. Asked, answered, particularly in the
right.
Democratic
Party. Right.
Second is the way he campaigned. He was everywhere. Okay. Third is he articulated even those unpopular things that he stood for.
Right.
Okay. But people were not unclear where he would take it if he wins. And that is actually where the blog that we're talking about that just came out, the snap out of it, is leaders is, you know, people want you to declare your intentionality in terms of as leaders is to not who you think is the better president, not where you stand on social policies. They just want to understand where you think we are going as a firm during these times of chaotic times.
Did you know that he was born in Kampala, Uganda? I didn't know that. We're talking about Zoran Mamdani.
He's an immigrant.
Yeah, into an Indian family. Mm-hmm. His mother is Hindu. His father is Muslim. Mm-hmm. I didn't know this. I'm just looking up very quickly here on the Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. And his family immigrated to South Africa where he was 5 years old, and then to the United States when he was seven, settling in New York City. It's quite a story. You know, it's quite a great American story there, right?
Look at, you know, I've been reading, voracious reader, try to read as many as possible biographies, and one just came out about Zbigniew Brzezinski called Zbig. And, you know, I read the biography, and he came from an immigrant family. He spoke with his Polish accent his entire life. I think they immigrated to Canada, before he came here. And, you know, you stop and think about the two of the giants of foreign policy during the 70s were both immigrants, Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger. Okay. And if you're looking at, you know, going back to the 60s, right through 76 with 79 Jimmy Carter. No, 76 Jimmy Carter. Our foreign policy was being shepherded by two gentlemen in national security. It was being shepherded by people who were came immigrants. They were came to the United States as children. But it's going to be an interesting time.
But Vance must be watching this closely because he's probably worried that this guy might run as a presidential candidate, given his success in New York, right?
You know, I think that, you know, probably the most erudite and intelligent candidate right now, Mayor Pete.
Yeah.
Okay. He speaks six languages.
Yeah, I love him. Yeah, it's true.
You know, he's the one that goes on Fox News and will get yelled at and just get back a lot better than he got. Okay. But if the United States isn't ready for a woman, okay, and frankly was reluctant to have a person of color,
right,
President Obama, I'm concerned that the sexual orientation of Secretary Buttigieg will be an influence, which is too bad because, you know, Tim Cook is gay.
Right.
He hasn't done bad with Apple.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's a number of people who've stepped up, but it hasn't been that many decades where we, you know, same-sex marriage and things like that, but some people still live with it.
It will happen eventually, but I don't think it's going to happen for a few more years or decades. It'll happen at some point.
He's younger than my kids. He's got plenty of time. Okay.
So, right.
You know, right. Moment. And he's shown no indication of fading from the political landscape.
Right. Hey, Tom, I got to go, but it's really been a pleasure talking with you. Okay. And I appreciate you sending me the blog material and then coming on to the show, because I think you bring a certain perspective that is the essence of wisdom. And we are in a time when we need more people providing more wisdom.
Well, it's that old guy thing, 75, the new 74 that I'm leaving you with here.
Well, you've got a much younger wife, so really you're like the 50-year-old at this point, right? Well,
when my wife hears this podcast, I'll tell you a story real quickly, Dad. I've always looked like somebody else. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, I used to look like Richard Dreyfuss, and I actually met him, okay, back in the goodbye girl days. Okay.
Right.
We looked like each other. And people would, I looked like him. Now, here in New England, there's a sportscaster, Peter Gammons, who I look very much like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm related by marriage to Paul Simon. My brother-in-law is Paul's brother, Eddie. And people would be in New York way back in the day. People would come up to my brother-in-law and ask for an autograph, and he would sign it. Okay. And I said, what are you doing? He says, it's faster. They won't believe I'm not Paul. Okay. So what happens is, when somebody will come up to me wanting to know how the Red Sox are ever going to do, thinking I'm Peter Gammons, I don't spend a lot of time saying I'm not Peter. Okay. Now people come up to my wife and I in restaurants, things like that. They're always very cool. But we were stuck in New York. And my wife will say, you know, Peter's here. In other words, people are staring at me. Okay. And we were stuck in New York, very late flight. Okay. Finally get back to Boston. And the next day, you know, and what was happening was, people would come up and they would want to do selfies and stuff like that. You know, because, yeah, sure, fun. But, you know, maybe someday they'll realize I'm not me. Okay. But I was on the radio listening to the New England Sports Network, picking up a rental car. The radio was still turned pretty massive. Somebody was calling. He says, you know, I was stuck in the airport last night with Peter Gammons. He could not have been nicer, you know, and his wife is smoking. You know, his wife is an attractive woman, as is yours. And so I said to my wife, you know, Latina, and I said, you know, hey, they saw us at the airport. They said you were smoking. She thought I said smoking.
Yeah.
You know, so right. She went off.
Right.
Well, listen, let me know when these things are going to drop.
Okay.
I think we have another one pending. Right?
Yeah, we do. And they're working on it. All right. Take care. Talk to you later.
Tune in next time on The Valley Current.